It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The State Department of Human Services is offering $40 million in incentives to increase autism and intellectual disability services to pre-pandemic levels. What are the challenges to reach those service levels? Nancy Murray is president of the ARC of Greater Pittsburgh and a senior vice president of Achieve It. Nancy, welcome back to the Confluence.
Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
I am well. Thank you so much for asking. Human Services Deputy Secretary Kristen Ahrens told the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, "This represents a significant investment in trying to support these providers to do whatever it takes to bring people back," end quote. Do you agree it's a significant investment?
I would say it's an investment. I would not say it's a significant investment. Right now, we have a crisis when it comes to the workforce shortage of direct support professionals throughout the state of Pennsylvania. And the other thing to note is that these $40 million come from the American Rescue Plan. These are not permanent dollars.
And they're in the form, many of them are in the form of bonuses. Is that correct?
Most of those would be used by providers as bonuses for their staff that they would, like to bring back. But bonuses, as everyone knows, are not permanent increases to someone's wages.
Is that specifically how this money will be used to bump up staff pay at least one time?
That's our understanding. Yes, Kevin.
Okay. Now, what is the level of services you're offering now compared to pre-pandemic, since the goal of these bonuses, this $40 million, is to increase the level of services to prior to the pandemic?
Well, what we're hearing across the state from providers is a couple of things. We know that for some providers, they've actually had to close programs, such as community homes, simply because they do not have enough staff to care for people. We know that providers of day services had to close those services during the pandemic. They've started to bring people back, but they've done it in different ways. For some, they're bringing people back, maybe fewer hours or fewer days a week so that at least everybody can come back for some time. And then for others, they've just still had to turn people away. They just don't have the staff.
You were talking about bonuses for staff. Could this lead to just keeping staff, maintaining them, or could you actually add some services because you will maybe retaining these workers?
Well, you're going to be hard-pressed to add services at this point in time, because even with bonuses, we just don't have the rate increases that we need to increase the salaries of people to retain them. So bonuses are a shot in the arm. We will be able to give bonuses to staff that we have, but you can't increase services without increasing your labor pool. And for that, we need rate increases.
Deputy Secretary Ahrens said the state is about up to 75% of people who lost services who have recovered them. Is that about the same in our region, would you know?
You know what? I'm not sure where Kristen got the 75% figure, so I can't refute it. I can't agree with it because I honestly don't know where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. How much of the difficulty in offering services to restoring levels of services is due to staffing, which you've alluded to, but also maybe has there been an increased demand over the last few years for services?
Certainly, surveys that we've done the last couple of years, we know that the biggest problem facing the intellectual disability and autism community is the lack of staff that we have across all the services that we provide and across the state of Pennsylvania. You know, we would, providers would love to provide more services. Providers would love to be able to support more people. That's our mission. That's what we do. We would love to be able to support the people that are going to be coming off the waiting list, that are going to be given waivers again. It's our mission. That's what we seek to do. But when weeks go by and you receive very few applicants or applications from potential new staff, you just can't promise people that you're going to be able to provide them with services if you don't have the trained, experienced staff to provide those services.
So staffing, is it a matter of losing staff, retention, or recruitment? Are young people just not coming in the door to say, I want to get involved in this profession to help my fellow Pennsylvanians?
That's a good question. And it's a little bit of both. We know that we have lost some very, very good staff from long-term staff over the last couple of years. These are people who, in many, many instances, when they've been leaving, they've said to us, you know, we hate to leave this job that we love, but we just need to find a job with a higher wage and benefits so that we can take care of our families. At the same time, it's very hard to recruit staff with an average pay of, you know, maybe $16.50 when those same people can go to Starbucks or Target. You name the company that they can go to, and they can make more. The job will be easier, and they will find it easier to take care of their families.
Is there a waiting list? You referenced that. How big is the waiting list to get
right
in
now,
to get services?
Yeah, right now in the state of Pennsylvania, there are a little over 12,000 people on the waiting list, and a little over 5,000 of those 12,000 have an emergency need for service. And as that name implies, they need services now.
So what are they doing?
Well, what we know is that in lieu of having enough staff to provide their services, we now have families across the state. You know, families have actually become the safety net for our system.
Nancy, how difficult is it to tell a family, we just don't have the resources, the direct providers to help your loved ones?
It's one of the hardest conversations we have with families now, especially elderly families, single caregiving families.
We have families, as I said, Kevin, across the state where the family caregiver has had to give up employment. So now we have families where they're either unemployed or underemployed because they have to stay home and care for their family member.
Nancy,
and now we have families going on 2 and 3 years where this has been their experience.
In our last minute, Nancy, you were a member of Governor Shapiro's Health and Human Services Advisory Committee. Will that help in trying to get more administration support for Pennsylvanians with autism and intellectual disabilities?
We were hopeful. Unfortunately, members of the committee have not even seen the final report yet, so I can't answer your question. We don't know what's in that final report.
And very briefly, you have mentioned in the past that this money is an investment, even a drop in the bucket. What is needed?
Sorry, Kevin?
What is needed if it's a drop in the bucket? Just a few seconds left.
Probably about $400
million. $400
million
for across the state for these services.
Yes.
Nancy Murray is the president of the ARC of Greater Pittsburgh and senior vice president of Achieva. Nancy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Mary Lee Williams. Buffalo Bills defensive back Damar Hamlin, a Pittsburgh native, went into cardiac arrest during a game in January. The response to the incident and Hamlin's recovery highlighted the need for preparation and swift action in sporting events. State Senator Katie Muth has proposed legislation to increase safety protocols for Pennsylvania schools. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with Senate Bill 512. This would require each school building to have at least one AED or automated external defibrillator, and would require school districts to create emergency action plans and certified emergency teams to respond to incidents of sudden cardiac arrest. There are 500 school districts in the state, most with multiple buildings. Do you have any idea how many already have AEDs without this requirement?
Just for clarity, the current law as of 2014 says that each school entity shall make a report to the department detailing the number, the condition, the age, and placement of the AED in each school building. And so based on the data that's available from the Pennsylvania Department of Education, there are 2,976 school buildings in our Commonwealth. And the total number of buildings that are reported to have had to have an AED on site is 2,808. So there's about 168 school buildings that don't have them. What the data reporting to PDE does not really clarify is, even though it's supposed to show you the age of the AED and all of those things, it doesn't tell you about the pads being expired, batteries. And it's also really not an enforced thing, right? So this is 2014 that this became the law, and 168 are reporting not having them. And that also doesn't, the law in 2014 did not require training or an emergency action plan relative to how to use this AED.
Don't schools already have some level of emergency response in place? I mean, you know, these are school districts, they're county level, you know, regional, city, that kind of stuff. But wouldn't they already have some kind of emergency protocol in place?
Certainly, there's likely generic protocols as to who is called for various emergencies. The actual requirement of identifying an emergency action team within a school district who's responsible for protocol, right up the chain of command, for reporting, for calling 911, who is trained to use an AED, those are not part or mandated as part of any kind of emergency plan. So they're individualized by district. And that also goes to the point of, not every school district is in the vicinity of an area with municipal police, or they may rely on multiple EMS providers, right? So schools certainly practice for fire drills and active shooter drill, but there's no practice for a sudden cardiac arrest.
Does your legislation include a path or, you know, some way to pay for these machines and training for the educators that are going to need to use them as part of the emergency response team? Because, you know, let's say like some schools, they might be quite large, have a number of buildings, and outfitting each building with an AED might be expensive for them.
Sure. So in Senate District 44 late last year, we did a grant program. We gave the Chester County Intermediate Unit dollars that they could use to purchase AEDs to help each school district in Senate District 44 that needed either replacements. A lot, what we found was we had them, but they needed replaced. The warranty was gone. You know, it had gotten old. So when they age out, they need to be replaced. So those dollars were available. And if you have, you're able to get more of a bulk discount price. They're approximately, you know, $1,500 to $2,000. And so when we talk about cost, certainly, like, yes, schools will have to pay for this. This bill does not put funding into the legislation. So they would have to pay for it. But there's also school safety dollars and other grant programs available by the state. So it's a simple allocation of, we're prioritizing all these other forms of safety and the likelihood of a fire or a mass shooting. Not that those things can't happen in a school. The instances of sudden cardiac arrest are higher. So why aren't we planning accordingly for those same emergencies? And I would argue, as a former athletic trainer, if you have any kind of athletics whatsoever on your campus, you need an AED, especially in high-risk sports. So certainly there will be some level of cost. But as I mentioned, if the data is from 2014, schools seem to at least all except for 160 something budgeting this out, right? And have been paying for it already. So this simply just the training can also be done, you know, for often for no cost at all through local nonprofits like the United Way has helped the rest of the school districts in Chester County that I don't represent get the same resources that this grant program has because of Aiden's Heart Foundation and their partnership. So there are a lot of groups that are nonprofits that have filled the gaps for this funding.
Does your legislation only apply to public schools? Are charters and private schools included in the legislation as well?
I believe it's all schools. It's a school entity. So if it is a, and if also a charter school does receive public school dollars. So
you've received some bipartisan support on this legislation. It's in the Education Committee in the moment. Both of them are SB 512 and SB 513. Republicans control this committee and the Senate as a whole. Do you think that your legislation is going to make it out of committee?
There's a like bill, but less of the things that we have. Senate bill, I think it's 375. Rosemary Brown has a bill also in the Education Committee. It does not require the training and the emergency action plan. So hopefully we can try, if her bill should run, to amend our bill language into hers to make her bill have everything that should be implemented. I was told earlier this session when I had two bills that I shared with Senator Lisa Baker that involved the athletic training profession that we introduced last session that did pass out the Senate, died in the House, that a bill with my name on it would never run under Republican majority. So I have no pride in ownership in that we need to advocate around this legislation because it's the gold standard, but that amending it into another bill, as long as it becomes law, that's what needs to happen. So you would think that this is a pretty nonpartisan issue. And if the other side of the aisle claims to be so involved with school safety and so concerned, this is a basic measure that, to be frank, should have been done a long time ago. So I would say it's in the public's best interest as well as those in the legislature to actually take action and move this forward.
State Senator Katie Muth, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. Things are heating up at the Pittsburgh Glass Center. This week, the arts group breaks ground on a $15 million expansion of its headquarters in Friendship. 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll has more on the Glass Center's remarkable growth over the years.
It starts with a plug of cold glass the size of a wine cork. Add one furnace, heated to 2,300 degrees Fahrenheit.
We'll just let it chill for a second. There's a lot of heat inside there.
Then, some sculpting with a blowtorch.
Yeah, that's going to be really beautiful.
In the Glass Center's industrial-looking glassblowing studio, or Hot Shop, Zach Lehue helps Brazilian artist Mercedes Lachman realize her vision in glass. His tools include a yard-long steel blowpipe.
Go ahead. Blow light.
Blow light.
Metal shears, and even thick wads of wet newspaper to shape the burning hot glass. Lehue and fellow instructor Myshawn Cabrera painstakingly transform that little plug into a transparent, hollow oval ring the size of a football.
You can even see, it's like there's areas where the air is trapped, and you can see that air trap go all the way around now, which is great. It's exactly what we want. Yep.
Lachman, who's doing a two-week residency at the center, is pleased.
Yeah.
The Glass Center is busy year-round with students and professionals in its Hot Shop, Flame Shop, Kiln Room, and more. Over the years, the center says, more than 50 artists have moved to Pittsburgh because of the center. It was founded in 2001. By 2018, the building had grown almost too busy.
That was really when we started realizing we were out of space.
Longtime executive director Heather McElwee began planning an expansion. In 2020, a capital campaign had just begun when the pandemic struck. The furnaces went cold, and the center, which relies heavily on earned income, couldn't hold classes for a year. But the group survived. Then came season two of Netflix series Blown Away.
Good morning, glass blowers! Is everyone ready to play with fire?
Yeah.
It's a contest for glass artists.
If they can survive our fiery competition...
Careful! I know I won't get a second chance. It's nail it or die.
McElwee was a guest judge that season. The show is filmed in Ontario, but McElwee calls its impact on the Pittsburgh Glass Center immeasurable.
The first weekend that it dropped, we saw a 1,000% increase in our website traffic. It was insane.
More students and other visitors followed. One PGC staffer even competed on season 3.
People continue to call us and say that they saw Blown Away and that they can't believe that they could come watch the exact same thing in their own town, in their own backyard. And so we've seen a huge increase, not just in our class signups, but just in people dropping by to see what we do here, which is really great.
Construction on the expansion begins this week. The center is adding a third floor to its existing building and extending its second and third stories over its parking lot. The spaces will house a second hot shop, a dedicated space for retail, and a fabrication lab to accommodate higher tech gear like 3D printers. In all, the Glass Center will grow from 16,000 square feet to 27,000 square feet. That means more room for students like Karina Shethia.
I feel like I've always just been really fascinated by the material, like just the fact that it goes from like molten to this like beautiful translucent or transparent piece.
Shethia studies mechanical engineering at Carnegie Mellon. This is her second class in the hot shop. Her creations include a transparent cereal bowl.
Pretty proud of the way this turned out, just in terms of like the thin lip, but it definitely needs some cold working because it does not stay flat.
The expansion also holds promise for artist and instructor Zach Lehue.
Almost doubling the foot space in the building. It's going to be incredible to see. Like having a secondary hot shop and having a whole fab lab. Yeah, I'm very excited to see what people can make with that.
The Glass Center expects the expansion to be complete by summer 2024. The facility will remain open during construction. Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, a talk with Allegheny Health Network's new president, James Benedict, the chief architect of the health system's $2 billion expansion. Thanks to our team, Emma Furry, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.